What we do here is go back.
Welcome to The Hustle Sold Separately. We are a weekly podcast dedicated to doers, creators, entrepreneurs, hustlers, people in and around the world, CEOs, people just doing it. They definitely are not in the status quo. They are doing things out of the box, or you are just attempting to build something you truly believe in and often at times are misunderstood, like many of our guests that come on the show each week, which we're also blessed to have. And, you know, our guests, I always say the caveat for them is they're not allowed to talk about end success. I mean, they are successful in some capacity, whatever metric that is for them in their life. But we talk about the journey, the real shit that's happening in real time, because that humanizes all of us. It humanizes the entrepreneurial journey and it connects us all, because it shows you, like, doesn't matter if a person's on their first venture, their fifth, their 50th. Everybody's trying to figure it out no matter where they're at in that journey. And they're constantly building on themselves, their craft, you know, their passion, they're leading the way in some capacity. And I'm grateful that I get to pull that out of them each week on the podcast. And this week is no different. I'm Matt Gottesman, as some of you guys know, and who've been following for a while. For those of you that are newer, please subscribe, please rate and review us. It means a lot to us. It apparently also means a lot to Apple. So I would really appreciate anytime you guys can do a rating and review. You guys can also connect with me on Instagram at Matt Gottesman, at HDF Magazine, which is where a lot of people are, originally know me from. And then, of course, at Hustle Sold Separately, and a multitude of other areas. If you follow Matt Gottesman, you'll be able to see all the other endeavors. And we have another really, really great show this week. This is actually something very close to my heart. So when my guest suggested this topic, I like nearly kind of fell out of my seat, mostly because I preach this shit. I've been preaching it for a very long time, starting my days back when I first started in the music industry, pre-iTunes, because I was a young pup then. I still am, but pre-iTunes. And this idea of independence and retaining your ownership. That's what this beautiful digital world that we live in is. It's changed the game in a lot of ways, and it has allowed us to have more responsibility and accountability for our growth, for where we're heading, and for our leverage, and for how we, you know, manage what we're creating, and for our profitability, for our mind's sake. And, you know, digital content in general is really revolutionizing, you know, everything in entertainment, which my guest, Zach Hanavar, and I were going to talk about. He's the founder of One Day Entertainment and Management for Yes Theory. And I'll cue up his bio here in a minute. But, you know, this world that we're living in now, content is changing the game. How we're connecting with audiences is changing the game. Building community with that audience so that when we do launch new content, they're constantly showing up. We're only as good as all of you who are interacting with us and letting us know how our work is doing. And then, of course, connecting even beyond that into a multitude of different things. It's how we're dictating our products and services to all of you. It's how we're getting our voices heard, right? So we're living in a very revolutionary time, and we're going to talk about all that stuff with Zach. And as I mentioned, he's the founder of One Day Entertainment, management of Yes Theory. You guys got to check that stuff out online. I'm sure many of you already know Yes Theory. That's probably because of this man from Toronto, Canada. I finally went to Toronto 2 years ago for my first time, and it's one of the most amazing cities on earth. To all of my Canadian friends, like, that city is like no other. Good luck in the finals. And he was a natural entrepreneur. He was selling, from a very young age, selling, you know, chocolate bars out of his backpack. I did that as well, too, in the seventh grade, just starting his own tutoring company in university. He just basically had a determination and a hustle that helped him stand out. And he joined Shopify at a very early age and stayed with the company until they IPO'd. What an incredible journey to be with them and see what was happening with Shopify as it was growing. And then it IPO'd at 4,000 employees. 2017, he decided to take off, as he calls the golden handcuffs, and move to California to take a chance on managing a YouTube group called Yes Theory. Later in 2018, Yes Theory went to grow to 3.5 million subscribers. He collaborated with Will Smith and fooled the entire world with the Justin Bieber burrito stunt. And so he's, like I mentioned, he's running a management company called One Day Entertainment, and he continues to strive to help make Yes Theory a household name. He's got all kinds of things going on. We met briefly through this beautiful digital landscape that I talk about, you know, including Instagram. And the minute, minute he approached me, I was like, I know you. I know this brand. I love everything you're doing. Let's get on the podcast. Zach, thank you for being on the show, man. I really appreciate you.
Matt, thanks for having me, brother.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, I mentioned before the show, like, there's a lot going on here. I want to know more of the journey. The first question is always basically the same. How did we get here to today? Like, what was going on in, you know, help me connect the dots a little bit of this awesome journey that you've been on. You can go as far back as you want. And then, you know, we'll definitely be talking about kind of what you're seeing in this digital landscape and really this idea of retaining ownership. And we'll go from there.
For sure. No doubt. How we got here today. Well, first, I'm definitely a product of two amazing parents and a wonderful family from Toronto, Canada. Originally moved there when I was four from Iran as a refugee. And I think that really is the ground foundation of how we got here today, because I think that installed a chip on my shoulder mentality the sense of underdog to always try to build something for myself and build something for my family with the opportunity that I got to grow up in the beautiful North American dream. And from Toronto, Canada, like you said, I was at Shopify and took off the golden handcuffs of always knowing I wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I was at a company that was treating me very well, paying me very well, helping me learn a bunch of the skills that were important to me. But when I met the Yes Theory guys in 2016, I decided that they were spreading a message that I truly believed in my core, and I wanted to help them from a business perspective spread that message to the masses, because I thought it was a message that the world was in dire need of, and especially the young adults and teenagers growing up really needed to hear. And so I decided to take a chance and move out to Los Angeles. They decided to take a chance on me and bring me in with open arms. And that's how we're here today.
That's awesome. And I dug the fact that you said, you know, Shopify was taking care of me, but, you know, there's something more for me. And I got a break from that. That's not easy for a lot of people, right? I got a break from that. And A, it's scary for a lot of people, but B, you know, going with your gut is always the best answer, in my opinion. And then, you know, the fact that, you know, here you met these guys with Yes Theory, and that the second point you said, they just resonated with me, like their mission and their message resonated with me. So, like, I mean, taking those chances really weren't as much as you're just aligning yourself. Can you talk a little bit more about, like, you know, Yes Theory? For I mean, a lot of our audience probably knows Yes Theory, but for those that don't, I would love to bring more light to them too.
Absolutely, and I would love to as management. So Yes Theory is a group of friends that are all international. Amar is Egyptian, Thomas is Swedish, and Matt is French. And they all met at a school called McGill in Montreal. And they bonded over the fact that they all felt very unfulfilled when they were finishing up their school. And they kind of came together and said, you know, why don't we try something where we do 30 things in 30 days, and each thing will be a thing that we've all never done before. And it'll be us getting out of our comfort zones, and we'll call it Project 30. And every day we'll videotape that and release it out on YouTube. And that consisted of things like making a painting and selling it to an art gallery in 24 hours, or doing stand-up comedy, or learning how to synchronize skates. And after those 30 days, they had a couple thousand subscribers, which at the time probably felt like millions. But more importantly, they just had never been happier. And I think they came together and said, holy crap, these 30 days have felt more fulfilling and have been more evolutionary for us than the years of university and what school was supposed to give us. And so they decided to continue making these videos on YouTube, all with the premise that the best things in life are on the other side of your comfort zone. And they were preaching that if you seek discomfort, which is their motto, that you will ultimately live the most fulfilling version of your life and grow to reach your maximum potential. So the videos that we create, mostly on YouTube, although we're expanding to other platforms like Instagram and Facebook, are all with the guys sometimes getting vulnerable and facing their fears. Sometimes it's strangers getting out of their comfort zones and facing their fears. Sometimes it's subscribers, and we'll pull on our fan base and see who in our fan base has a fear. For example, there was a group in Seattle, Washington, that was a hip-hop group that loved making music, but they had a deathly fear of performing live, and so we flew to Seattle and threw them a few hundred-person show to surprise them by getting them to open up for one of their favorite acts. And then sometimes with celebrities, which is, you know, humanizing them and showing that, you know, someone like a Will Smith as a icon also has a fear of heights, and he struggles with that as well. But, you know, showing that he can do it and get over that fear by bungee jumping out of the helicopter over the Grand Canyon can make someone else believe that, you know what, maybe that fear that I have is something that I can take a step towards as well.
That's incredible. By the way, as a mission, it's absolutely incredible. It's funny. One of the things that I wanted to do was I wanted to get a group of entrepreneurs, and each entrepreneur has to pick a different fear that they have, and then we all do it together. but we each have to do it. So, like, if somebody's afraid of jumping out of a plane, we're all jumping out of a plane. Not that, like, I necessarily want to, but I'll do it, right? And then, or if somebody's, like, afraid of doing a stand-up comedy act, you know, or something like about, you know, something that they want to just do something like that, we all have to basically be do a stand-up comedy act.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, that's the amazing part of the, and we do that too. Sometimes we're doing stuff and one person will have a field day with it. Like, for example, Amar is, loves heights. He loves adrenaline. And so whenever we're doing something heights related, he's in his comfort zone for that portion. But someone like Thomas may not be. And so Thomas's heart might be racing and he's sweating, but Amar will be there for the moral support. And then there's other times, for example, like when we're around wild animals, Amar gets really, really, gets the palms sweaty. His heart starts racing. He gets uncomfortable and Thomas is a lot more comfortable. And so everyone has their thing, but as long as you do them collectively, yes, that moral support goes a long way.
That's unbelievably true. And I absolutely love the mission because, I think that it's one thing to talk about these things, right? I feel like previous generations, and it also could maybe have been the lack of the internet in previous generations, but, you know, they would kind of talk about it and pitch a good story or pitch a good, like, you know, motivational and an inspirational thing. But if you're not constantly pushing your own boundaries, and in this day and age that we live in, where everybody can see it, that to me is more inspirational. Like, holy shit, he really just conquered that, or she really just did that, even though she didn't want to. Like, okay, I'm going to be okay. You know what I mean? Like, that, I feel like that connects us. Like you said, and I said, the whole humanizing thing, like, man, if Will's a human just like everybody else, you know? So, and look, Will struggled with it and he conquered it. And then you also mentioned, you know, helping men get more vulnerable, which I'm very a big fan of because I think that the narrative there is changing a lot too. Like, vulnerability was only called a weakness from previous generations, in my opinion, from previous generations, because, like, you know, you have to be tough, but it's like, yeah, but you also have to be smart. So if you don't know something, the smartest people that I know that are doing very well were smart enough to ask for help, you know? So I think that there's a, you know, that you mentioned the vulnerability in the men. What are some things that you've done with like that in that category?
Yeah, good question. It's all about, I think, for us, being totally authentic on camera. So yes, while, you know, we're putting out this positivity message on our channel, we don't hide the fact that, you know, some of the guys struggle through mental health issues sometimes, and they go through their own anxieties and depressional cycles. And so being able to show that, you know, we're not perfect, and it's not like, oh, look at us, we don't have fear, we can go out and do anything and overcome anything. We want to be able to show people that it's not all about, you know, fun things like bungee jumping and skydiving and things of that nature that are exciting. Sometimes discomfort comes from, there's other forms of discomfort that are not just like adrenaline and, rebuilding a relationship with a family member that has been lost is uncomfortable, you know, and sometimes even appreciation is uncomfortable, like being able to call your mother, a sibling, and just be like, you know what, everything you've done for me, I truly, truly appreciate. And I just want you to know that by itself is oftentimes an uncomfortable call to make, but it's one that is truly, truly needed.
Absolutely. I mean, letting down your ego, letting down your pride, you getting vulnerable and into heart-centered versus, you know, egocentric. I mean, I like the fact that you said, we don't want to hide all of that. And I feel like this kind of leads up a little bit to the theme of we're living in a very revolutionary time with media. It's actually why I got into media, is because I wanted to be able to have the narrative of like the real talk, the real stuff. And, you know, often at times, and you're still seeing it with the Instagram and other things. And I totally, you know, whatever, everybody's got to get there somehow one way or another with their, they'll eventually realize it. But like, you know, the facade style of media, in my opinion, doesn't help the way the authentic style of media does. And I can never do other, I can never go against the authentic. I think that that's the only way to show people. And I feel like that's becoming, that is becoming and will be a dominant force. You know, some time from now, right? I mean, how do you feel like the digital landscape in general is changing because of content?
Yeah, I mean, the entire landscape of a lot of things within the entertainment especially is changing within because of digital content. But I think that, like you're saying, on some of these platforms, people being able to put up a facade or an image works to a degree, and that's where it can get very, like, blurred lines, is that sometimes people can put on a mask and go out there and pretend to be someone that they're not on these channels and garner a pretty large audience. Sometimes the engagement isn't as strong and some people see right through it, but generally the mass is like, it's possible to be successful, but I think that there's a ceiling on that. And I think to truly be able to inspire people to take action and to be able to have an engaged audience that's willing to truly like listen to what you're saying and then allow that to actually make them take action towards a certain thing that you want them to do or that you're inspiring and empowering them to do, requires you to be 100% authentic and to truly be able to take your own medicine and do the walking for all the talking that you do. And I think other times people are following people on social media and on Instagram or on other platforms, but sometimes it's from a entertainment perspective. So they're not necessarily watching with the standpoint of, I truly believe in what this person is saying. And if they were to come out and tell me like, hey, we're going to do a community run at this place, I'm going to show up because I believe in them or whatever that thing that that person might be preaching. So I think that's the difference. And that's the key between people who are super authentic and are talking from the heart and then also acting on that on their own lives with the people that are just, you know, doing whatever they think is hot or trendy or will get the most amount of subscribers or followers or likes.
Yeah, you know, it's such an interesting fine line, and in watching it is, you know, or being around it, it's crazy. Like, so my following has been no bots. It was all just, and I was also pre-algorithm changes and all that, so I get that. So it was just I was just like, oh, you do this because it's a community building. But I the landscape's changed so much in the last 3 to 4 years. And it's really interesting to watch even people who you thought were inspirational. And, you know, well, first of all, everybody's human. Everybody, I think, wants their voice to be heard. They want success. They want whatever it might be, some multitude of things. Now, how they go about it is a different scenario. But you're right. I think it's hard for most of the masses don't necessarily see that. But I also do feel like if you build it in from a false intention or from a false, like false empire, you know, sooner or later that dialogue will or has to come out. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter, but it's interesting to see how much of that online people did just to build the following. But then it's like, so now what, you know, because once you have that human connection, that's to me the next layer of like where, you know, brands and companies are and legacies are really born and like informed and grown. So and you mentioned before the show about the importance of retaining your own ownership, you know, over all of this stuff. I mean, I saw very early on with music what was about to happen. They laughed at me as a kid. They were like, all right, sure, kid. And I'm like, ooh, okay, how do you not see this? Because to me it was like, you know, this is you know, 17 years before Nipsey Hussle, and Nipsey Hussle was probably like 08 09, so about 8 years before Nipsey Hussle, you know, Chance the Rapper, Frank Ocean, you know, Russ, like all the stuff that you're seeing with, they're growing their audience, they're curating their art, they're making a living off of that, they own all of their rights. And you're seeing this in entertainment, you're seeing this in other areas as well too. But talk to me about your passion behind that retainership.
Yeah, and to be honest, I don't know where the passion came from. I think it's more so just understanding the value from a long-term perspective. And I think that sometimes retaining ownership might not be something someone particular should do, but I think the differentiation is, do you truly believe in the art that you're putting out there? Mm. And if you do truly believe that it's great and that it's valuable and that it's going to last for a long time, then the value over a period of years and decades is a lot more than a check up front to then give away the rights for that to then in perpetuity put money in someone else's pocket. And I think just from being someone who's very passionate about business and passionate about the structures of different business deals to be able to lucratively benefit someone, I realized that, oh wow, a lot of these people obviously don't, or from what it shows within the deal structure, don't believe that their art is that valuable. Like an artist that, you know, thinks that they're going to be successful and that the song that they just made or the album that they just made is going to be an album that we'll be listening to for years and decades, you know, won't give away the rights to that for a big check up front, because they should believe that that album will then continue to be listened to and used in movies and used in commercials, and maybe a movie will come out of it, and et cetera, et cetera. That should be how artists who truly believe that their art is first class, like a class, should be kind of going about things. But I think if you're an artist and you want to, if you think that the album is subpar, if you don't truly believe in it, you think it's like a one-hit wonder, then you can technically justify the, hey, well, if this record label thinks that, you know, this is worth a million dollar advance, and I really don't think that I'll ever even hit my recoup, let me just take this $1 million and sell this art, and then I'll move on and go do something else. But it, for people who truly believe in their art and truly believe that it can be something that lasts with time, ownership is just the way to be able to get the most amount of value over a lifetime project.
You know, that was actually really well stated, because it really does, it comes back to the intentions, right? Like if you are in this game for the longevity of, no, I'm a musician or I'm an artist and I want, this is what I want to do the next 10, 20, you know, 30 years, then it's a long game mentality, and you've got to, you know, constantly build on that. If you are, you know, just it's something that makes sense now, but you don't see it for the longevity of it. What a well stated, you know, point is, like, all right, you know what, you want to pay $1 million for this? Like, cool, go right ahead. Like, I'm out after that. And actually, in some ways, you do see that from some artists where, you know, they're like, this is just one facet of what I do. There's so much more I want to do. They take that cash flow and immediately go and reinvest into, like, you know what, but I've always really wanted to do my own, you know, clothing line, or I've actually wanted to always do like a, you know, retreat for, you know, for mindfulness or whatever it might be. You know, it could be anything. Or I really want to put in real estate. I want to go invest in, you know, opportunity zones to help build out, you know, cities around the U.S., you know, things like that. It's like, it can just lead into something else. That's where I think managing themselves and the intention of, like, do I want this for today or am I playing for tomorrow? Well stated.
I think one of the things that's also interesting there is, like, from someone who's in a management position, sometimes you see that these artists, if they're not educated, and they're completely throwing 100% trust in their management to be able to decipher these deals. Unfortunately, sometimes management agreements and compensation is not incentivizing managers to build those types of infrastructures and foundations for their artists. Sometimes it can be very transactional, because as a manager, if you're taking a percentage of what this artist is bringing in, well, you know, if that artist retaining their ownership and getting little bits of residual income for the next 20 years is not as enticing for you as, like, hey, let me just cut an advance of $2 million up front, give away all the rights, and at least I get my 10, 20% of that. So that's unfortunate. I think that's where artists need to be educated from a business perspective, at least to the degree that they can make sure that their management is properly taking care of them. And then that's a whole nother discussion of, you know, the right manager to artist relationships that come from a place of caring rather than a place of transactional in exchanges.
No, it's so well put. I had Cato, producer on this show, and he did a post about this the other day. So he's a producer for several Grammy nominated artists and whatnot. And he was saying that, you know, if you're looking to manage an upcoming talent, like choose that talent for the long game and really, you know, nurture for the long game and work out, like have like a close knit of each other and like, you know, help through like here, navigate the waters. Here's what's going on. Here's what can happen. Here's why I believe in you. And I'm willing to play the long game for you to help you get to go there. However, like, here's how that can look, but we have to make decisions together like this, you know, to actually connect with the artist, and be involved the way an investor would be involved with, you know, a startup. Basically, right? And saying like, hey, like, you know, I'm not here just really to just bring money. In fact, I'm actually here to bring resources. I'm here to bring talent, and I'm here to bring nurturing, because like, let's make this successful, not just like, let me just throw money at you and then, you know, get you to blow up and then take my money and run. So
absolutely. Like One Day Entertainment has a saying that like artists and talent, they don't need managers, they need CEOs, because they're not just artists, they're businesses.
Yes.
And I think approaching it from that angle is just very powerful.
Let's talk about One Day Entertainment. How what's its structure and what does it aim to do? And you know, you're obviously managing Yes Theory, but you've got a lot of other things under there as well, too. Feel free to go to town on it, man.
So One Day Entertainment started, I mean, it right now is exclusively just Yes Theory management, although we're potentially bringing on another creator soon, so stay tuned on that. But really, it was more so just seeing a group of entrepreneurs like Yes Theory and creatives like Yes Theory, and seeing that if creatives like this don't have a piece of the puzzle that brings a business perspective or an entrepreneurial perspective, that it won't be able to spread as far as it has the potential to. And so One Day Entertainment was kind of built off this like vision that, like I kind of said previously, that these types of creatives, they don't need managers to just like pick up the phone and negotiate a deal and get, you know, 15% more than they would if the artist had just negotiated on their own behalf. It's more about like being able to look at it like from a bird's eye view as a machine and as a business, and then try to be able to find the bottlenecks and remove those and find the process streamlining and really treat it like a CEO standpoint, where you're helping that creative build an empire around themselves that will last them beyond their art form. So if that's a musician, you know, that person's not going to tour and make albums forever. So what are they going to have when they're 30, 40, 50 years old? One Day Entertainment was built off that long-term focus of helping these creatives build that for themselves. And so the long-term vision is to ultimately take on more artists and talent that range mostly within the digital content space, obviously, because I think starting and slowly building an expertise and a knowledge base there, but then also potentially expanding onto other forms of art like music.
We're definitely aligned, brother. We're definitely aligned. I mean, you know, I manage an online, well, not manage, I create an online platform for specifically helping brands run themselves like a business, because it's fun to be creative. It's needed to be creative, but it's also fun to be knowledgeable about how to manage that creativity and how to trademark. When do you need legal agreements? What type of deals are you structuring? Now you're working with a kind of a larger partnership. Do you need a stakeholders agreement? You know, how are you systemizing things so that way there's something on the back end running all of it? You know, all of these things that I think are so important for creatives and for entrepreneurs in general, because the overwhelm is real. And then not only that, but the being taken advantage of is real. Like, artists at the end of the day, like, are basically trying to operate from their soul, and that's what they want to spend their time doing. But good artists, either they figure out that they have to manage themselves like a business, or find people like you or I or anybody that's willing to do, you know, find, you know, people like One Day Entertainment to like say, okay, I want you to handle this because I want to go 150 miles an hour always with this creativity, but I need that relationship with somebody that I can trust to manage from a business sense. Which I also think it takes a lot of vulnerability from an artist to like, you know, because how many times have they been taken advantage of, right? I mean, you're seeing this probably left and right, especially in the digital world, because a couple people really caught on, especially in the music world. They started going out to like all these Instagram artists. Well, people who were blowing up on Instagram were like, hey, I'm going to, you know, I got you. Let me get your following. I got you. I'm going to go now pitch you to a few people. But, you know, as management, they, some of these deals, like these kids didn't even know what they were signing. And it's scary, you know. And then they're ending up on the Breakfast Club, and Breakfast Club was calling them out like, you don't even know your deal. I'm not going to say who that was, but like, you don't even know who your, what your deal is. And it's like, no, you know, I just rely on so-and-so. And it's like, oof, you know. So let's talk about that. I mean, there's an educational side too, right? Like anybody that, you know, whether it's with Yes Theory or anybody else potentially coming up, like there's this kind of, I don't want to just help you. I want to educate you in the process, right?
Absolutely. And I think it comes from a place where, I think this is a fact, and this might not be agreed by everyone, but I think that business and unfortunately money is the international language of the world.
Right.
And things get done because of the financial impact and structures that are in place, whether that's within our schooling system, whether that's within our healthcare system, whether that's within our entertainment industry. And that is what I truly, truly believe to my core. So I think that whether you're in business or not, or whether you're a creative or not, whether, no matter what you do, the more you understand about the business structures in place around you with the industries and the systems that you're interacting with on a daily perspective, you'll be able to better understand why they're doing the things that they're doing. And so what are those systems built to optimize? Like, for example, our schooling in the USA and in North America, I don't think it's necessarily optimized to make sure that students are graduating with the most percentages of high-paying jobs or with the most knowledge retained. They're optimized from a private, like, money-generating system that is designed to keep students in debt to some degree and to make money. And so, unfortunately, if you can understand that and see under the hood and say, oh, wow, the formula and the algorithm here is actually meant to optimize this, not that, you can kind of play the game a little bit more intelligently for yourself. And so that's the same thing with films and music and entertainment. If you can look under the hood of a gigantic movie production studio, you know, they're not necessarily optimizing for the best films to come out. They don't need the best stories and the best, you know, the things that leave the viewer coming out of a theater super inspired. What they need is something that is a pretty safe bet that won't tank, that will make a little bit more money so that person doesn't lose their job. And so you can see that all around. I mean, in the movie industry, I'll call out that, you know, that's why we keep seeing Avengers 5 and Spider-Man 6 and that, because they know, hey, wait a second, we have this IP and the format works and people show up to this thing. So why don't we just spin that off? That's so much better than if we take a chance on this one story that's based on this book that might, you know, take off and be a home run, but it also might tank. And so we got to be careful, and we're not going to take that bet. So I think if from an individual's perspective, it is all of our responsibilities to some degree be educated on the business structures, especially with the things that we interact with on a daily perspective, whether that's, you know, you deciding to go to school. If you understand, if you wanted to pursue post-secondary education, I think that's fine. I didn't say what I said to deter anyone from doing that. But if you go into that understanding how the system is built, and how the money is flowing from that structure, you can kind of navigate a little bit better on how not to get taken advantage of. And I think that's true across all industries in the world and internationally across all countries.
Well put. And you're absolutely right. I mean, business is this universal language, as is money. And business they're hedging, like you said, with the Avengers and whatnot. It's like, it's no different than any other business format. You're like, hey, this seems to be working, so we're going to just keep doing it until A, either it no longer works, or B, we have to adapt to something new. Do you think, you know, even before post-secondary education, I mean, this is a loaded question because we already know, you know, whether or not the system wants to change is irrelevant, I guess, at this point. But do you think that the educational system, even at the like grade school level, has to start not only acknowledging what's happening in this digital world, in this new connected world, in this new business paradigm, but start kind of educating them in a way of thinking about how that is also like how those are like business models. Now, keep in mind that this is the same system that's also not teaching taxes and investing or anything else. But like, I feel like that the educational system should even start doing that. Even in high school, it'll also connect with the students a lot more. Students will actually want to go to school even more because they're kind of like, oh, wow, like, you know, we're bridging that gap and you're actually speaking my language of like, you know, what is going on? Like, how do you manage this, you know, versus just like programs that are sprouting up here and there? Do you think that just the educational system of all this needs to be changed quite a bit?
I think the education system in North America as a whole, but especially within the USA, from the little bit that I've gathered from kind of seeing it from afar when I was in Canada, and then also seeing it from a little bit closer up while I've been living here, and I think it's also the case to a degree in Canada, I think it is one of the most broken systems that we have. And it's the really, really unfortunate because it's essentially education is your investment into your human resources for the future. And I think there's a lot within the schooling system that's broken, not just from a curriculum standpoint of what they're teaching and, you know, teaching the things that, you know, are applicable to these students' lives once they graduate, but even from within the tie into digital content and social media and our phones and technology, people aren't being taught how to interact with this form of technology. And so a lot of these young teenagers or young adults are not really being taught from anybody, you know, how do I interact with my phone so that I control it, not it controls me. And that is not like for a second, screw business, but the mental health impact that that's having on the younger generation is absurd. And if the schooling system, like as much as it's important for schools to be teaching us how to pay taxes and understand how to be tax savvy or whatnot, put that aside. What's more important is that the student doesn't graduate high school spending 3 hours a day on Instagram, completely anxious if they don't pick up their phones for 30 minutes. I think that is a lot more devastating on the long-term impact it's going to have on us than us not being super tax savvy or understanding like how the hell do I pay tax and how do I maybe optimize to pay a little bit less tax or, you know, save a little bit more money or invest in businesses that will grow. That's what I think is like probably the first step for schools right now is teaching the younger generation how to interact with the internet and with the web, and then how to use it so that it is actually being used for the benefits that it provides, because it does provide a lot of benefits, and minimize the amount of harm that it's actually doing to us from a mental perspective and from a social and community perspective.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, the educational system is shit. Like, I mean, it's just, you know, here in the U.S., like, I'm just calling that out. It's okay that I said it. It's fine. Like, I mean, and I don't want to take away from our really great educators, and I don't want to take away from their hard work and from the ones really trying to change the system. I think it's absolutely needed, and I agree with you. I think it's a multitude of topics and subjects. Mental health, I think, is something that is very close to my heart. Not I think, is something that is very close to my heart. Especially, you know, even on Instagram, watching these kiddos, I'm telling you, it's crazy. Sometimes I'll say something like, name something, you know, really good about your life. I did one post where it was like, use your age as a chapter that you're on and, you know, what you would title this chapter. Do you know that everybody 16 and under, it was so negative and like heartbreaking that I had to reach out to each of them through DM and be like, hey, I hope you're okay. I want to let you know, like, it's going to be fine. Like, don't, you know, and I'm talking like the mental health, the depression was higher than I have ever seen it. Because of social media and the internet and this kind of frantic, you know, facade that's going on and whatnot. And, so I think schooling and education system has to change. It has to address meditation, mindfulness, and positivity and gratitude and new business paradigms and new ways of connecting and understanding the internet and understanding, you know, what we see on the internet. But then also, you know, understanding our history that got us to here as well. Like, you can actually integrate all of it all together. And, you know, I think we have to, the government has to get younger. let's maybe start there. Once the government gets a little bit younger and, you know, millennials, we're all in the office everywhere, I think then, you know, that'll be a different scenario. Hopefully, we'll see. But I like that you know, I like that you said that. I do think, you know, kids not having to be able, being able to not have to pick up their phone for 30 minutes and feeling comfortable about it, and, you know, having them more engaged in class because it's like the discussion is actually relevant to their outside world. You know, I couldn't agree more. What are you noticing? What have been some of the biggest impacts with Yes Theory that, like, you didn't see coming beforehand? That, I mean, obviously you couldn't have until you were actually working with them and doing all this. What have been some of the biggest impacts that you guys have, you know, that were just phenomenal, that really touched you in a different way, other than all of it, of course?
Yeah, it's a tough question to answer because I think the most surprising thing within it is that no age, gender, demographic is really any different in terms of, like, that this philosophy impacts them. I think that a 14-year-old female is them seeking discomfort and finding out what it is that makes them uncomfortable and going after that. That feeling of, like, satisfaction and fulfillment that comes from achieving that and coming out on the other side untouched but actually stronger is just as beautiful as I've seen the same thing happen to, like, a 65-year-old man who, you know, it thinks that, you know, life is over and that he has no juice in the tank left, and then understands that by going kind of internal and seeing that, oh, this is the thing that's making me uncomfortable. If I go after this, I'll be happier on the other side. Mm. I've seen that look on the faces of so many people from so many different countries, from so many different ages, and it's the exact same, which is, like, the most comforting thing of all, where this is a universally applicable philosophy that an ideology that people can really take action towards. And I think one of the most beautiful things that we've done at Yes Theory that I'm very proud of is, like, our KPI is not our numbers. Not in the sense of our subscriber count or not in the sense of our revenue. Our KPI is the amount of people that take action. And it's been really hard to, and I'll explain what I mean by take action, but it's been really hard to sometimes quantify this, but we want people to take action towards, bettering their lives and actually going after their authentic desires, which is, you know, not what society wants you to do, not what your parents want you to do, but truly what you want to do. And usually to find out what that is to find out what makes you uncomfortable and what you're scared of. And oftentimes, coincidentally enough, life puts that on the other side of your fears, like the thing that truly makes you happy. It puts it on the other side of fear to kind of give you a little bit of an obstacle course to get through. I think that that's been very, very eye-opening since I've joined the team, but it's also been just a very beautiful thing to see that it can be something that truly, truly is a household philosophy and ideology.
How much do you see you're absolutely right about the obstacles being put in their place and put it in their way and then they just have to conquer it. How, like, refreshing is it to the person who conquers it and then realizes, like, oh wow, like that wasn't what I had thought it was in my head. You know what I mean? Where they realize that how they were operating mentally about the whole situation and then conquering it, which this is why they probably say the famous quote, it's happiness is on the other side of fear or whatever, or, you know, everything that you want is on the other side of fear. And it's really true. How many times have you seen that happen where the person just, like, that wasn't as bad as I thought, you know what I mean? Does that start a trigger in them being like, yeah, where else am I doing this? And you're like,
exactly, everywhere. Yeah. Almost every single time the reaction is, oh my goodness, that was incredible. And why did I think that that was going to be so bad? And that doesn't mean, like, for example, if you're deadly afraid of heights and you go skydiving, you know, you're terrified all the way up there. And I almost guarantee the moment that your feet leave that plane, it's pure bliss. And that doesn't mean that as soon as you land that you won't be scared again to go up there. It's not like it's cured after one time. But I think you gain a little bit of experience and perspective. And once, like, I like to see that as a muscle. And the same way we go to the gym and we lift weights and that kind of, like, beats our muscles up and they grow back stronger and we get more fit, that's the same kind of thing with this muscle of discomfort. Whereas if you flex it and work it out and try it on a daily basis and on even little small things that we can do, and sometimes even little random acts of kindness are flexing that discomfort muscle, because it's uncomfortable to often show kindness in the day and age that we live in. But that then it also becomes easier, and you start to see the symptoms of fear from a bird's eye perspective. And I see that within my Yes Theory guys all the time, where, you know, now that they've been doing this for 3 years, their muscle is developed to a point where they can see their tendencies within themselves. So I'll give you an example. We recently decided we did a video where we answered a random fan DM. And the first DM that we opened was, "Hey, come to India." And we all looked at Thomas and said, "Hey, Thomas, gather your stuff. You're leaving to India tonight." And he was like, "What are you talking about? That's, you know, on the other side of the earth. And what am I going to do in India? I've heard India is like hectic to actually go after your to go by yourself. And I don't know about that." And he started to realize, wait a second, this is kind of the feeling I get with all the things that end up making me more fulfilled and happy, and like making me meet new people and gain a new experience. And he reflected on that, was like, "Oh, that kind of means that this is something I should probably do," because he's seen that cycle so many times, where as soon as his excuses start coming in and his body kind of tells himself like, "Oh, maybe you don't want to do this," or, "Oh man, you know, it's hectic and maybe you should wait and now's not the right time." Now he sees that as a symptom of like, "Oh, what's on the other side of this is going to be beautiful." And I think once you can get to that level, then you really start to actively look for things that bring those symptoms out of you. And that could be, you know, you see a girl across the restaurant that you think is really, really beautiful, and you want to go up and say hi to her. You're like, "Oh, wow, that symptom just kicked in. Oh, crap, now I have to do it, because, you know, I know that on the other side of that, I'm going to feel so much better. And if I don't do it, it's going to put a kind of a tick in the tally of, like, me not building that habit for myself." And so doing it on a small daily level actually builds that muscle very strong, so that when those moments of big discomfort come into our lives, whether that's quitting your job or moving to a new country or something of that scale, your muscle is a little bit more developed, and that doesn't seem like such a big plunge.
I love the fact that you're documenting it. You're documenting what's going on in people's heads out to the world. Like, "Hey, we're, you know, next step, just, you know, plug up the EKGs to their head." You know what I'm saying? And like, just start, like, "We're actually going to watch your brain waves while doing this." Honestly,
that's a great idea. We should try that out and do some clinical studies of like what really happens and what comes out on the other side. That'd be interesting.
I formally nominate myself. I'll come out there. Look, I'm a state away. I'll actually be there later today anyways. I have no problem being, and I think it'd be great to do it with any person really, but I have no problem being a guinea pig for showing the world like I'm no different. Maybe where I'm at, maybe what stage I'm in, maybe like my journey, you know, these things are all different. But as a human being, I'm no different than anybody else. And that we're all operating kind of, you know, the whole Maslow's like, you know, basic needs all the way up to, you know, operating in abundance. And like, I just think that the more we can scientifically show what's happening at both the conscious, subconscious, and energetic state to show people like, "Hey, I'm no different than you. I'm taking action in these areas because this is where it seems to make sense. Do I have a clue how it all turns out? I've got a vision." You know, I got a couple of visions there, but like, but we don't know unless we do, or we break our fears, or we break these habits. You know, I think it'd be great to see also a habit breaking series. And watch, and then doing the EKGs to that too. Like, habits are fascinating to me because the body, how it, like, I've been learning quite a bit about this, like just how the body basically goes on autopilot because of your habits, and that becomes your subconscious leading the mind versus the mind leading the body. And it's just quite fascinating how habits work. And then like in breaking them, what happens when we try to break them? Well, the body becomes uncomfortable. Right? Because it's like, no. I don't know what's going to happen. I need consistency over here. And you're about to do something that I don't know, which is probably what you're witnessing with a lot of these people when they're breaking like these fears. Right? I mean, they're essentially like, they're having to either A, trick the system, or B, completely obliterate it and jumpstart it into a whole new realm, so the body can, and I guess in a way that's kind of what you guys are doing. Like you're pushing them into a whole new mode of operation. No?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we had an interesting conversation recently with the author of a book called Atomic Habits, James Clear, who has studied habits thoroughly and has an interesting perspective on, like, you know, a lot of it is like the perception you have on about yourself and the action that you take. If you take one action, for example, you know, if you every time you think like, oh, maybe I should go to the gym, and you decide not to, that's kind of a tally for the perception of your self-image in your own mind of being either lazy or not being athletic or not being fit. And every time you decide, hey, I'm not going to put on my running shoes right now and even do a mile or do a little walk around the block, that's a check mark in that box of who you believe you are. And it truly takes, that slow change is really what it is reinventing your self-image in your own mind. Every single time you put on those running shoes and decide to wake up in that morning and go to the gym or do a run or just check the box of I'm fit, I am athletic, I care about my body, that is a check mark in that perception. And if you can do that over a long period of time, then you truly believe, no, I am athletic, I am fit, I enjoy, like, I work out, I enjoy this. And then that is you rewriting that in your own mind. And I think that that's where that habit comes from and becomes powerful, is the images and perceptions we have about ourselves. But that's really, really hard to overcome. And some of us have been checking the box of the alternative for so long that is such a deeply ingrained image of who we have, who we believe we are, that it takes a very, very long time of small, continuous effort to rewrite that narrative and reinvent ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely agree. What was the name of the book again?
The book is called Atomic Habits, and the author is James Clear.
Excellent. I thought that sounded so, and you're absolutely right. It's funny how much we reinforce at the subconscious level. What's happening is that it's not the reason of like, oh, you know, I'll do it tomorrow. Like, oh, you know, I'm not really feeling the gym this morning, so I'm not going to go. But in actuality, what you're really doing is you're actually reinforcing an internal perception of yourself over and over and over and over again. It almost makes you realize like why getting present is so unbelievably important, because like if you know what's happening to you at the subconscious level, it should scare and terrify you. In my opinion, it's kind of right. Like how I look at it is like the more practices and changes and energetic states I work on, the more the bad habits or the the negative realms or like or just the negative energetic states, all these things, like they almost scare the shit out of me to be even like, no, I love you, I can't go over there. You know, like I'm not gonna do that over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And we yesterday actually we just started this thing that we do that Amar's leading called the 100 Days of Sweat, where, you know, Amar was someone who kind of struggled with this in terms of building the habit of living a healthier lifestyle and working out and being fit. And he had always placed the goal of like, okay, well, right now I'm at like level zero, let's say, where I'm not fit at all. I can barely run 2 miles. And then he would make these audacious goals for himself of like, you know, I'm going to, you know, lift this amount of weight, or I'm going to run a marathon. And sometimes that, you know, it's a very daunting goal to put on yourself when you're still at the stage one. And so what he decided instead was, let me just do the bare minimum every single day. Let me just break a sweat every day for 100 days. Hmm. And some days that can mean running 5 miles, but some days that can mean at 11:55 at night, right before the day ends, I just bust out crunches until I break a sweat. And that is, when we spoke to James about that, James, the author of Atomic Habits, he was, when he broke it down into his habitual terminology, was, every morning or every day at some point, you're checking off that box of like, this is important to me and this is who I am. And after 100 days, that becomes something that's deeply ingrained in you. So if you show up for yourself on a consistent basis and even do the bare minimum, eventually that can evolve into becoming more and more and more. And if you continuously do that for years on end, then that starts to feel so habitually ingrained into who you are and who you want to be that you'll almost feel the same way someone who's never worked out will feel like, oh, I don't want to do this, or oh, this is painful when they're going to the gym. After 5 years or years and years of committing to that on a daily basis, if you don't go to the gym for a few days, you're like, oh, I don't like this feeling about myself, and this makes me feel the same way. So those are kind of opposites because they're both rewriting narratives. If you've been super athletic your whole life or super fit and like committed to that, and you stop, then all of a sudden you still get those same negative emotions and negative feelings that you would had you never worked out and then tried to start.
So true. It's such a, I did a post on this recently about, because once you remove the overwhelm, you're not really left with any other option but to just do it. Or at least the comfort level of like, oh, I can do that. And I was talking about how I learned this actually from a nutritionist, and then I kind of ingrained it into other areas of my life where it's like each week, remove one thing that no longer serves you or isn't good for you. In this case with her, with a nutritionist, it was with health, and add one thing. Well, what happens 8-12 weeks from now is your body's completely different. You've removed 8-12 things and added 8-12 things. Suddenly, like, you know, you've shifted your entire, you know, bodily function and internal wellness. And so the theory then became, where else can I apply this? Right. That's I wanted to ask you, too, how has your life changed in general from just from being a part of all this with Yes Theory? Because I would think that by being around so much of this and seeing so much of this, and obviously you were already, you know, probably pretty aligned in your own ways, but like doing all this work and content, how has that really impacted you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say that it's almost like I feel like I have a lifted responsibility to make sure that I practice what we're preaching to a deeper degree and to a larger degree. Which is funny because sometimes we joke that, you know, sometimes there's managers out there in the world, and I've met a couple that are representing artists or talent, but they don't necessarily, you know, if it's in the music case, they're representing them and they're managing them, but they don't like their music. They don't actually like enjoy their music. They're not, their own artist isn't one of their favorite artists. And there's other people who are managing, whether it be like health and wellness gurus or whatever, but then they'll practice the methods that that person is actually preaching. Whereas that's always been funny for me because I'm like, well, why would you represent someone that's spreading philosophy or message that you're not even practicing yourself?
Exactly.
So it's been very, very important to me to always make sure that now I'm at a higher responsibility to make sure that I practice this philosophy and that, you know, and it's funny, every time we're faced, when we see each other, like in that moment of discomfort, we call it out and we're like, well, you have to do it. We're freaking Yes Theory. If we don't do it, how the hell do we expect to be able to tell other people that this is important to do? So it makes it very interesting because then I think we do it to almost like a repetitive and an addictive like degree where every single time we notice discomfort or fear in one another, we call it out and that person feels like, well, you know, if I don't do this right now, then how can I tell myself that I deserve to be either on camera or behind the camera on part of this team to be able to try to inspire other people to do it? And that sense of like accountability because of the amazing community that we've garnered is like so motivating, and especially also within our team to have one another constantly be able to support one another through those trials and tribulations or objectives has been one of the most beautiful things, and it's gotten me to grow and accelerate and develop personally on a faster scale than I was ever before in my life, and that's been very, very exciting.
Man, so well put, brother. So well put. First of all, where can everybody find out about like everything that you're doing right now online with Yes Theory and you, all of your personal accounts? Like, where can they reach out to you?
For sure. For me, I think the best way is through Instagram, through the DMs where you and I even connected. So I'm Zach.thecreator on Instagram. Zach spelled Z-A-C-K and then .thecreator. So the Instagram DMs, and I wouldn't be doing my job if I said you couldn't find Yes Theory on all social platforms at Yes Theory on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram.
No, I mean, I love it. I want everybody to know more about Yes Theory. I'm going to come create content with you guys. I'm just going to force my way in.
Yeah, I love it.
Like, hey, I'm here. I'm actually volunteering. Like, just you guys, I'm just a runner today. No, man. I mean, I absolutely, I love everything you're doing. And also I love that, just like you said, like, you know, reach me in the DM. I tell people all the time, like, it's so fascinating to me when they say like, oh, you know, how'd you get this person on? How'd you get that person? I'm like, look, we're all technically humans. I'm like, I have a platform that I want to give a voice to them too. I'm like, so I'm not asking and taking from them. I'm wanting to accentuate their journey. And people are like, oh, all right. You know, and it's like, I go in the DM and literally like whoever, and they respond. And I'm like, it's called human to human interaction. So I love that you said that. And I encourage everybody listening, you know, reach out to Zach, like DM him. Like, he's right there. Just, you know, reach out, check out Yes Theory. Appreciate having you on, man. Really appreciate having you on the show. And you know, you know, well by now that with the show, it's a journey driven podcast. So like, you're welcome back on anytime you want. Because, you know, 6 months from now, a year from now looks very different. If you want to film something like and do an episode, we'll do a whole, like, we can do a whole collaborative piece, whatever. And then, you know, and it goes out through all this distribution any way you want, man. Like, I think that it's really important, both what you're doing with your own evolutionary process and then what you're doing with Yes Theory. You know, these are the type of conversations that need to be not only just happening, but, you know, brought to the world in a very consistent kind of change up things, change the status, change the system kind of mode. So really appreciate having you on, man.
Yeah, thank you. And I appreciate you giving a platform to people that have something to say and have an opinion on some of the matters that are important in the world. So kudos to you, and also a huge token of like perseverance and showing what true hustle really is.
Thank you, man. You know, yeah, very interesting journey, especially when, you know, now it's becoming more popular, and I attribute to like, you know, brands like Yes Theory or Gary Vaynerchuk, like with the whole, you know, kind of the authenticity and the journey driven stuff. But when I started about 5-6 years ago, like the journey, you know, oh, okay. Yeah. You know, that's cool, kid. You're like, no, man, like I'm telling you, let's document shit in real time. Now that's become the narrative, document. Right. But, I think what you guys are doing is taking like what's happening in the subconscious and bringing it into an experience to the rest of the world. Hell impactful, and very grateful for that. So, really, really, man, appreciate you, Zach. And, yeah, man, thank you. You can come back on anytime, bro. And stand by. I'll connect with you offline here in like 1 minute. But, for all of our listeners, check out Zach, Zach Anavar, One Day Entertainment, Yes Theory. Reach out to him on Instagram. He's doing incredible things. DM him. He gave you the go ahead. If you don't, that's your fault. We really, truly appreciate all of you guys. And for myself, Matt Gossman, The Hustle Sold Separately, we are out.